Shurganda-rupa-sadayah
Asankaryena-tan-vindhyat Granadinindriya-panchakam
Granadinindriya-panchakam.
So, let me break this one. Idamaha ye visheshaha syuhu ganda rupa rasa adiha asankaryena tanvindya granadi grana adi indriya panchakam. The word idam means this. And they're declining it because as idamaha, all of the thises, because if you remember in the previous verse, the vritti, the thought modification, can be turning inward, and then we get the aham, this identification with me, with conscious being, or if it's turning outward toward the external world, it becomes idam, where idam means this: any vishaya, any object that is objectified is an idam vritti. So that this. Okay. And so all of the idams, right? So all of the objects that we can label as idam, as opposed to aham. Aham means I. So the vritti that turns inward is me, is the self. All of the vrittis that are focused outward through our means of knowledge are idam, are this. Okay. So he says all of the thises, those which are the thises, okay, the visheshaha, these the attributes of the thises, such as ganda, the sense of smell, rupa, the sense of sight. Ganda actually means smell, not sense of smell. The smell, the rupa, the form, the rasa, the taste, etc. So the etc. would be the sense of touch, right, the sense of hearing. So rasa, so we would want to include, because it says adi, when you say adi, it means this set, etc. So what are the things that we would add to this set? Well, it would be primarily the sense of hearing and the sense of that we would add hearing and also touch. Okay. So now, what he's saying here, he's leaving some things out that I will be filling in. The second line, he says, asankaryena. Asankaryena means unmixed or individually. Tan, those sense objects are divided in vinyat. Are separated into their individual categories, like taste and smell, and you know, and touch. Think the feeling of touch, or the feeling of the hearing, or whatever the sense object happens to be. They are divided. They are experienced separately through each one of the five sense organs. Indriya panchakam, the group of five sense organs, beginning with the sense of smell. So why is he even saying this? Well, because we've been talking about the manas. We've been talking about the mind, right? And the mind experiences all of the five sense objects together. And so they're all mixed up. So they use this word sankaryena. They're all mixed up together. Like, say I'm looking at this room, well, I can at the same time be experiencing all of the forms. I can be feeling the air blowing on my skin. You know, I can be hearing what's being said. So all of the sense objects are mixed. They're all happening together in the mind. But they are all received separately by the sense organs. In other words, your ears can only hear, they can't see. Your eyes can only see form, they can't hear, etc. Sense of touch also, you know, is not the sense of smell. So the five sense organs are coming in individually to the mind. See what I mean? So your mind gets the whole picture. It takes in all of the data of the five sense organs that make this picture. And then that mind itself, which is a combination of all of these things, is illumined by the Sakshi. This is where they're going with this. So just to give you a little bit of kind of the cosmology, how the world comes into manifestation, so you can kind of understand what they're talking about here. It's nice to hear a little bit of it anyway. When we look at the cause for the universe, for the projection of the universe, and also the material cause for the universe, and then also the cause for all of the nama-rupa, all of the changes that go on in the universe, we would say that Maya is responsible for the changes. It's responsible for the projection of this universe, and so it projects, it sustains, it goes back into unmanifest condition. And when it projects, there are certain, you know, broad attributes that we can give to this universe that we experience. And the broadest attributes, other than just being Maya, having that mitya aspect, having no independent reality, so the whole thing we call is Maya because it has no independent reality, it's mitya. If we go into the nature of Maya, maybe the most sweeping attributes that we can recognize in this creation are what we call the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So we actually say that Maya itself, which is responsible for the projection of this universe, is sattva, rajas, and tamas. These three gunas, that is what it is comprised of. The sattva guna is that which allows for the reflection of consciousness. The reflection of being, like if I say, I am a conscious being, the mind says, I am a conscious being. That mind is enjoying consciousness to the extent that it takes itself to be consciousness. The table doesn't. The table, you know, the stool, has exactly, really exactly the same, we would call material cause, or the same adhishtana as the satchitatma. It is no more or less the satchit atma than this chair or these clothes or this body or the mind. But the table doesn't have a sattva component as a sukshma sharira, as a subtle body. There's no sattva component in here pervading the table to allow it to reflect consciousness and then take itself to be the table. Yeah. You know, I, the conscious being, am this table. Well, if there's no sattva, if there's no reflection of consciousness, that's just not going to happen. You know? And so we say the table is jada, the table is inert, but only because it doesn't have a subtle body which reflects the consciousness. Neither the table or the mind is the atma. The table, all of the things that we say to be inert, and all of the things that we say to be conscious, like the mind and the sense organs, all of them are Maya. None of them, the whole creation can enjoy Maya, and within the creation, everything that has a subtle body, it has the sattva in the subtle body, will reflect consciousness, and it will take itself to be a conscious being. Right? But actually, we use in the Shastra, we use the examples, if I hold a mirror up to the sun, or I hold a rock up into the sun, both are inert. Both are jada, but one has a special quality that allows for the reflection of the sun, and the other doesn't. It's not that this becomes the sun. It's able to reflect the sun, but it's not the sun. like that, my mind is able to as though reflect the self or manifest the self, but it's not the self. A vritti comes and goes, but when it's there, it reflects the Satchit conscious being. And so then, of course, this jada, inert, or what we call maya, mind, mitya, mind, can make that, naturally make that mistake, because it never doesn't reflect consciousness. Sattva by nature reflects consciousness. That's what this particular guna does. So sattva reflects consciousness. Rajas is the activity principle. And as we've seen, everything in the creation is in motion. That's the Rajas principle of Maya. So we're making these broad categories because we see these are the most broad categories that we can divide the world up into, really, and taking into account all of the things that we have to account for, which includes the consciousness of the jiva, the experience of ananda, the relationship between the nama-rupa, between the seer and the seen. All of these things need to be accounted for. And so in this particular model, the sattva accounts for consciousness in the creation, the expression of consciousness in the creation. Rajas accounts for the expression of activity in the creation. And tamas accounts for the expression of nama-rupa, name and form, in the creation. Mm-hmm. And so if we say that maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas, it means maya has these three, is comprised of these three gunas. That's what maya is. There's not some other maya that has these three gunas. These three gunas are what maya is. And so when the maya is said to project, project the universe and is sustained and then resolves, how does that happen? What goes on there? And so what the Shastra will say, using this particular model, it is its model. And so using this model, so the maya projects as in the form of the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth. That's, so maya projection is first as the five elements. What that means is that the five elements, each element is comprised of sattva, rajas, and tamas. But like space, we'll have a sattva element, a rajas element, and a tamas element. As with the other five, space, air, fire, water, earth, all of them, sattva, rajas, and tamas element. Now the sattva element of the five, the sattva guna of the five elements is going to be that which reflects consciousness. So what would be the sattva guna, the manifestation of the sattva guna for space, they say, is the sense of hearing. The sattva guna for air is the sense of touch, the sense organ for touch. The sense organ for rupa, is agni, fire, right? And so the eyes would be the fire element, right? If we take the sense organs, eyes would belong to fire. What would belong to water? Taste. What would belong to the element of the ability to taste? What would belong to smell? Would be the element to the earth. Would belong to the earth. Would be the ability to smell. Right? So why did they make this? So let's just, like, I'll just tell you this just a little bit, and I have to hold this whole construction in my mind. Sometimes I don't even know this, but anyway. I can, at least I can do it. Okay. In one form or another, I can do it. Okay. So, this is something interesting about these five elements. The earth is considered the most grossified element. Because earth can be perceived by all five sense organs, right? I can hear earth, I can touch earth, I can see the earth, right? I can taste the earth, I can smell the earth. And so it is considered the most grossified of the five elements because it can be perceived by all of the five sense organs. The second one up, the next, the more, the one up from that is water. because I can taste water, I can taste it, I can see it, I can touch it, and I can hear it like a babbling brook. But I can't smell it. If I'm smelling anything, that's going to be the earth in the water. The impurities in the water I may be able to smell. But the water itself can only be tasted. So I've dropped off one sense organ. So it becomes a little bit more subtle. You know. If I go up one to the scent, to fire, fire drops off too because I can't taste fire and I can't smell fire. So fire is only available for my perception, for my eyes. I can see it. I can also feel it, and I can also hear it crackle. Mm. So it's one of, now I've dropped off two. I've dropped off water and earth. Now I go up to touch. I can't see, you know, I can't see touch. Like an object of touch, I can't see it. I can't see the wind, for instance, but I can feel it. So the wind is the next element up, more and more subtle. I can't see the wind, I can't taste the wind, and I can't smell the wind. But I can feel the wind and I can hear the wind. And now with space, we give hearing to space. But space itself can't be seen. It can't be tasted, you know, it can't be touched, it can't be seen, it can't be tasted, we can't smell it. So it is the most subtle. We give the leftover sense organ to that, which is the sense of hearing. You could say hearing travels through space, or it's really the one that's left over. Right? Because hearing also, what can hearing do? It can only relate to sound, and they must feel sound travels through space. That's a little weak link in the space, you know. But there's something very beautiful about the orderly about this, you know, going from the gross to the subtle in reference to the elements. And so each element then will have associated with it a sense organ. So the organ of hearing goes with space like that. But it will also have a sense object associated with it. It'll have a sense organ and a sense object associated with it. But I want to stay right now with the sense organs because that's where we are in this verse. So I said the sense organs. But each one of those sense organs, which is such an aspect of the element, has to come into a mind which can accommodate all of them, right? Because the ears, which are space, can only hear. That's all they can do. You know, so the ear sense of hearing can't accommodate everything. You need a mind that can take in all of these perceptions. You know, and so what they say is each one of the elements, the sattva aspect of each one of the elements, are the five sense organs. The sattva aspect of all of the elements combined is the mind. And so the mind has to be the sattva aspect of all of the elements combined so that the five sense organs can come into that receptacle which can receive it. Do you understand what I mean? No? Okay, let me say it again. The sattva aspect of the five sense organs, of the five elements, the sattva aspect of the five elements represents each one of the sense organs. So the space, for instance, is the sense of hearing. If I did the space air, vayu, the air, is the sense of touch. Well, the sense of touch doesn't really have any relationship with the sense of hearing. Right? The sense of hearing can only hear. The sense of touch can only feel. The sense of sight can only see color, basically. The sense of taste can only taste. Mm. So, yeah.
What about synesthesia?
What is that?
That is when you can feel something, see or hear something.
Yeah, we won't go there. this doesn't go there. But actually, I've had experience like that. What you might be able to say is that somehow the subtle combination of the mind gets involved with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we can go do that later, like at satsang. for now let's understand the example, and then you say, yeah, but you can do this and you can do that. But in terms of what they're talking about here, they're saying that the five sense organs, you know, if will experience each thing individually. But the mind experiences all of them together. They've been talking about the mind up until now. Now they're talking about the sense organs, and they're just trying to make this differentiation. And I wanted to explain where this type of differentiation comes from. It comes from the way that they view the manifestation of the creation, which starts with Maya. First of all, Maya, which is Mithya. It has its being in the Satchitatma. And it is something which has no intrinsic being of its own, and therefore just becomes an incidental attribute, of Atma, of the self, because it doesn't bring about any change to the self. There's a lot more to this, but I'm trying to circumscribe it a little bit, because it'll take a long time to go through the whole thing. Anyway, so that's their model. There's Brahman that has this incidental attribute that they call Maya, that is responsible for the projection of the creation. They prove that just by an analysis of the creation, analysis of Namarupa, name and form itself, then it is Mithya. Because of certain logics that everything in this creation is bound by change. It comes into being and goes out of being. It is infinitely divisible time-wise. It's impossible to find a thing here, right? And any as-though thing that you find goes into an infinite regress in terms of divisibility into smaller and smaller things, and it goes into an infinite regress in terms of dividing time into moments, because any moment can be expanded into an infinite regress. And so you can't find any type of thingness here, and yet we experience this world, this very orderly, beautiful world. We experience our imagination, but upon analysis, we say it is Mithya. Okay, so what would we say is the material cause of this world that has no independent being? There are two material causes as though. One material cause has to do with the very nature of Maya. So, Maya itself. So, material cause, I don't know if this is too much. Some of you, it's interesting, for others, it's probably. Just let me go through it a little bit. Okay.
No, it's awesome.
For some people, it's awesome. Okay. For some people, it's really up and down. Edward always says, you know, he's been studying this for 20 years, but he hates this thing. But when he comes up, he just goes, but in a way, I kind of agree more with Kristen. It's awesome. If you put all of these things together, it's just something very beautiful and brilliant about it. So anyway, let's look at what they call the material cause for this projection of the creation. This is what you have to kind of understand. We have the Sanskrit word called upadana karana. Upadana means the material cause. So the upadana karana, what is the material cause of this continually changing creation? It's called the parinama upadana karana. It's the material cause which is responsible for all change, all modification. And that material cause is Maya. The Maya which projects, that is comprised of sattva, rajas, and tamas, which projects this whole creation. Maya is responsible for that. It's the upadana karana, the material cause, which is parinama, which is responsible for all modification. So that's just one way of defining, or in many ways, but one way of defining Maya as a material cause. The other material cause is called the vivarta upadana karana. That is the material cause that undergoes no change whatsoever to become the effect. And so that material cause is Brahman, right? Because Brahman, as we experience this creation here, as with the teaching, you can recognize that there is a common denominator that is pervasive to every experience that you have. And that common denominator, which is the invariable attribute, it never changes. Everything, every experience enjoys, fundamentally, consciousness, which itself is existence. That's why no matter whether you're talking about a thought in your mind, you can say, every aspect of that thought, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, and it is known. It doesn't matter what the thought is. It can be an emotion. It can be an imagination. It can be an intellection. It can be the ahankara. The ahankara is, and it is known. But this creation external through your physical, but through your sense organs, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is known, and it is known. That's the sat chit. And that sat chit doesn't change as the parinamas, as the modifications of maya go on continually changing, endlessly changing, which is its nature. The upadana karana, which is Brahman, is vivarta. Means it never changes. And yet, it is the material cause of this creation, because this creation is mitya. It has no being. Its being is only Brahman. And so this Brahman becomes an incidental attribute, you know, of the self. So, we're in the Vedanta, we're through Viveka, through the prakriyas, the teaching methodologies that differentiate, you know, myself from maya, need to do that thoroughly. The differentiation has to be thoroughly. Where does Brahman as the end, what part of me is Brahman, and what part is maya? Well, to do that, we have to bring in high relief the fact that everything that we've identified with as myself is actually belongs to maya. It is part of a projection of the creation. Kind of like when you have a dream, you can say, okay, the whole dream is my little bit, I'm the little Ishwara, I'm the little Ishwara of the dream. You know? The Alpagya, I'm the little Ishwara of the dream. When the dream comes, you know, the Adhishtana, the material cause, which is Brahman, is Vivarta. Means it goes through no change. When I have a dream, right, my being, consciousness, goes through no change at all. I remain as the Adhishtana. But look what when the dream comes, look who comes in the dream. Who comes in the dream is not only this world, but everything that I identify as myself. My body, my mind, my sense organs, my emotions, my relationships. Everything that I load on to me is actually a dream object, a dream character. And when the dream resolves, not only does the entire dream resolve, everything I thought was me also resolves. What doesn't resolve is me. What I thought was me resolves. When I wake up from the dream, what I thought was me is not there anymore. At all. Zero. Plus the whole universe is gone. But what is left is me. The one that I thought belonged to the dream character. Right? The one, the me that I thought was brought about or had its existence because of the body, mind, sense organs, is the one who is left when the body, mind, sense organs resolve. And there is no, that's where the dream is such a wonderful illustration that they use thoroughly in the Advaita Vedanta, because it's so powerful, really. When you wake up from the dream, there is no death experience for the character in the dream that was you at that time. There is no death experience at all. Nor is there any feeling that the universe has disappeared. The mityatva of the dream universe becomes apparent to you. The fact that it has no independent being at all. It has no independent existence at all. And so therefore, when it goes into an unmanifest condition, nothing has happened to the existence, to the being, to me, to the self, the one that I have, the very me that I have taken to be that dream character, to be an attribute, that this me, the self of me, is an attribute of that dream character. This illustration is used to understand what is actually going on here in this creation. And to really understand it in great detail, we go through this process of what we call Panchakarana, what happens when the Maya manifests. It's like if I went, say I did a deep, deep analysis of Panchakarana, of the process of the unfoldment of the dream. And what's what in that? Well, we've got the five elements, and we've got consciousness there in the dream, and we've got all kinds of activity in the dream, and nama-rupa. All of that is the parinama. All of that comes from the unmanifest to the manifest. And some of the things in that dream is able to reflect consciousness, right? And some things aren't able to reflect consciousness. And then there's the continual motion that's in the dream. The motions, the activity that goes on in the jiva, the activity that goes on in the whole dream universe. There's also the recognition that in this dream universe, there is sattva pervading the whole dream, so that you're not only a dream of the dream character experiencing it through your sense organs, you can also the Ishwara of the dream, where the whole dream, even if you're not identified with the character, those times, that you are the whole dream, the manifestation of the dream, that is me. And I don't feel anything weird about that at all. I can as well be the dream. I can as well be an animal in the dream. I can be a human being in the dream. I can be a man or a woman. I can be an old lady. I can be a Martian. It makes no difference. There's only that one me that has been superimposed, right, on every character in the dream. I say superimposed just on the characters in the dream, whether it be animals or what are humans or devatas, you know, even devatas, it doesn't make any difference. You know? My consciousness is though I've in this shastra it says that the I is Brahman, I entered into the dream in the form of all of the jivas. Mm. Because every jiva takes itself to be me. I am the conscious being, I am a conscious being, I am a conscious being. And then there's hierarchical. The animals have less consciousness than I do. Mm. They don't even have consciousness. The animals have less consciousness than I do, and the plants have less consciousness than the animals, you know. And I have less consciousness than the devatas. Well, I'm not sure about that. You know. But anyway, what I'm saying is that there's a variegated experience of consciousness based upon the type of upadhi, the type of conditioning adjunct is there. Actually, there is not more or less consciousness. There is not more or less existence. Mm-hmm. Consciousness itself, the conscious being, is not a knower. You need the instruments of knowledge to have knowership. You need the mind for there to be, to use the consciousness reflected in the mind is something which gives... allows for knowership, as though for the mind to enjoy knowership. But it's the mind that is the instrument of the knowership, or the sense organs that are the instrument of the knowership. And so the subtle saying, this is just a side, but it's all tied together with this in my mind. So say now, you have in this birth, you have a human body. The subtle body that transmigrates is now has this vehicle called the human body with which to relate to the world. It's like a counter of experience, so that you can relate through the five physical sense organs and the brain, the mind, to this particular plane of existence. You have this particular upadhi, this particular conditioning agent, in which consciousness reflects, or consciousness is manifest. Okay. Remember, consciousness is not a knower. The knowership belongs to the upadhis. Okay. Now you have an animal body, which has a sukshma sharira because it enjoys consciousness. The consciousness it enjoys is you, is your being. There isn't animal consciousness, and human consciousness, and devata consciousness, and worm consciousness. Yet there's a sukshma sharira, that sukshma subtle body, is in this particular life for you circumscribed by a human body, right? The same sukshma sharira in a previous birth could have taken a dog body, And the same Sukshma Sharira could have in a previous birth been a Devatam body. You could have also been an underground worm, you know, depending upon your karma. And so the physical body that you take limits the capacity of the subtle body. Okay? Now, the subtle body just simply reflects consciousness, manifests consciousness. The consciousness that is manifest is one and the same. There's only one. And so where does the me reside? What is myself, my self-experience that makes me me? Is it the upadhi, or is it the atma, or is it the self? Does the self give the me experience that makes me me, and now this me is in this body, or this me was the one who was a little girl, this me that's myself, this me is happy and yesterday it was sad or whatever, you know. I'm taking on all the gunas. This very me is now like this. This very me is now like this. This very me was a dream character. This very me is now free of that dream character. It's always me. It's always me. No matter what the situation is that I find myself in, no matter what the upadhi is. The thing is, though, that the conditioning adjunct, this body, mind, sense organs, if it is a dog, if I'm a dog this birth, it's the same me. It's not a different me. It's exactly the same me, but the upadhi that the sukshma sure subtle body indwells has different capacities. Like, as a dog, I remember when I was a dog in my last life. But the dog has tremendous ability to smell and to see and to hear, far more developed than we have. It can run much faster than we can run. It has so many wonderful capacities that we don't have. And we have capacities that it doesn't have. And that's from the standpoint of the upadhi. But the dog's me is your me. There are not two me's. The me-ness that makes me me belongs to the self. It doesn't belong to mithya, which has no being at all. Mithya has no being. It's just it's a display of nama-rupa. So this me-ness, the sense of me, the existence, my own being, the conscious being that I am, that is the vivarta upadana karana. That is the material cause of this whole creation that never goes through any change at all. And that is what we label as me or I. And that me or I never changes. So now say, just in this life alone, you're having a dream and you have a dream body, which is totally different, even looks totally different than you do, but it's yours, it's your dream body, and it has different attributes and all of that, and it's in a different situation that you've never been in before, but still you, it's your body, and you're going through these things. So that's you. That's where the me is now. Now, when you wake up from that and that whole thing goes away, you don't go away. The me has not changed one iota. There's not been even the slightest amount of change in terms of your self-experience, because the mithya is a different order of reality. The me, what makes me me, my very personal me, is the adhishtana of this whole creation. The very me that you are right now at this moment, not the upadhis, not the things that can be objectified, not the maya, not the things that go on changing, but that me. This me is Ishwara. It is you, it is you, it is you, it is all of the animals, it is the whole creation, it is the one non-dual me. This me that I am is the one same me, not like twins, but the one me that is the that illumines every mind. All the minds are different, all the bodies are different. Some upadhis are huge and big and powerful, and some upadhis are small and weak and whatever. But all of them enjoy the same one non-dual self. So, this panchikarana, this process of the manifestation of maya in the five elements, each of which has the setra, rajas, tamas, in great detail, how all of that works. The mind somehow, that's very helpful for the mind You know, as we go into the details and kind of categorize every experience that in baskets, we put in big baskets, every experience that is available within duality. Right? So that you can say, yeah, but I'm a thinker. Yes, but my mind is a conscious being, right? I'm the conscious being, the sukshma sharira that's that's where I am, that's the me. We have to, and you can't just say, no, it's not. you have to be able to use drishtantas and illustrations and also to show how sattva, rajas, and tamas, if maya made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, takes care of the expression of consciousness. You think I'm a conscious being? A conscious being is here and here and here in my mind and my sense organs. So my mind and sense organs indwelling this physical body, which also enjoys consciousness through the sense of touch. You know, this body, mind, sense organs, is the conscious being, right? Because I experience it as that. You say, yes, that's true. You experience it as that, and this is why. You know, then you have to show that what you experience as yourself, you experience the sense organs as, these are my sense organs, they are conscious. This mind is conscious, right? Yes, it is. The sense organs are conscious, the mind is conscious, the body is conscious, but they are also something known to you as an object. They enjoy consciousness because of sattva, but they're not you, because they come into being and go out of being while you remain. If you have a vritti, if you say you are your mind, well, let's look at it. Everything that the mind does, every thought that the mind has, right, comes and goes, and you don't. How can you be that? How can you be that when it comes and goes and even goes into deep sleep, into an unmanifest condition? Yeah? And then the deep sleeper, that is the one who I simply am, without a cognition of any given thing. There's no differentiation. So you can't even talk at that time. But when you become awake again, you look back at that condition and say, wow, when I was in deep sleep, when I was deep sleeping, at that time everything is in unmanifest condition. So you identify yourself as the one who went to deep sleep. So you're definitely present there. But when you went into deep sleep, everything was in unmanifest condition, and so including the mind and the sense organs, and so they can't be me. They go into a state where they are not experienced, so they can't be me. The me is ever experienced, but not as a knower. I've never been a knower at any time. If the sense organs are in unmanifest condition, then there's no perception. If the mind is in causal condition, there's no thinking. There's no emotions. There's just simply me. You know, and you don't have a mind in the deep sleep. You don't have a mind to say, you know, oh, this deep sleep is so good. and then when you wake up, you say, well, I couldn't have been there in deep sleep because I didn't know I was deep sleeping. Now that means that you're not your mind, and you're right, you are not your mind. The mind was in causal condition, there's nobody chattering away there. You know, there's no one making a commentary. You know? Yourself is not a knower, there's no jagged edge there, where the self goes after deep sleep and then it's gone. Then some deep sleep takes place, and somebody else comes back. No, nobody else comes back. Nobody left. Your being, which is always exactly the same, just is there as the luminary of whatever state happens to be there. And if the state is a state of extreme withdrawal of unconsciousness, where there is no mind that's manifest, the sattva is in unmanifest condition, then really, say you have the mind in unmanifest condition, and then, this doesn't completely work, but it's kind of neat. You have the mind in unmanifest condition, and you have the stool, which doesn't have a mind. Right? Stool doesn't have a mind, so it can't wake up. But the stool now, you know, which has me as its adhishtana, the satchit, conscious being, which enjoys me, the me-ness that I experience as only conscious being, you know, but this can't say anything about it, and this mind, which is unmanifest condition, can't say anything about it. Mm-hmm. So there's just me. It's just the me experience, that's all. Without any comment. Without any perception. It doesn't need any perception. You don't need any perception. You come back and you say, in fact, it's almost your old joke, I come back from deep sleep and you think, oh, that was great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was so great. I'm unimpeded, no problems. No problems. There's no experience of death. So anyway, just to wrap this up so you can see what's being said in a kind of a thorough way, but we'll do it even more thoroughly in a little while. It is important to go through all this panchakarana process because it accounts for the things where your doubts will be. Your doubts will be in terms of me as a conscious being, this body as a conscious being. Mm-hmm. How does that work? My sense organs are knowers. My mind is a thinker. That is who I am. To be a thinker, I have to be a conscious being. Right? To be a seer, or to use my sense organs, I have to be a conscious being. To have this body be my body, it has to enjoy consciousness. So how can that happen? How can you account for the expression of consciousness in the world, or the expression of consciousness in your imagination, or the expression of consciousness in the dream? Because these are all the imagination and dream are all wonderful illustrations of how this works for you. But they have to be delineated. They have to be, pulled apart, so that you can recognize and do this viveka that allows you to differentiate the conscious, the being, myself, the me, which is not knowing anything, from all of the instruments of knowledge. How is that? And you can also see, as you start to understand, that right now, at this moment, you, the me, the conscious being that you are, is not doing anything. It's not knowing anything. It is just simply satchit, consciousness, which is existence, that is labeled as me. That's another problem. If I say, oh, you are conscious existence. I'm not conscious existence. That's a funny word for me, for the self-experience. You know? And so we have to be able to relate these words, consciousness and existence, to the me experience. The non-objectifiable me experience is a simple, self-evident me that is the adhishthana that is always present to this display of maya, which includes this body, mind, sense, okay. So that's what they're working on here for about three verses. So, that's it.
Purnamidam, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.